Welcome to the Power Hour. I'm Adrienne Herbert, wellness coach, international speaker, and author. Each week, I speak to a variety of guests, from business founders to Olympic athletes, leading coaches, change makers, and innovators, to find out their daily habits, their rules to live by, and what motivates them to get up out of bed each day. Personally, I am on a mission to encourage, motivate, and inspire, so I hope that the Power Hour will help you to achieve your personal and professional goals. Welcome back to the Power Hour podcast and to the first episode of a brand new series. It is September, and September is without a doubt my favorite month, not just because it's my birthday, but I just love the energy in September, the last days of summer, back to school, back to work, and of course, the Power Hour podcast is back. This series, we have got an incredible lineup, and I'm so thrilled to be joined today by Benjamin Hardy. Benjamin is an organizational psychologist, an international bestseller, and his TED Talks have been viewed by almost 2 million people online. Ben, welcome to the Power Hour podcast. Where are you joining us from today?
I am in Orlando, Florida. Windermere, to be specific.
Right. So it's morning for you. It's evening for me. I am super happy that we've been able to connect and align a time schedule in our diaries to do this episode and to have this conversation. I've been looking forward to it throughout the whole of August.
I'm happy to be here. Yeah. So it's 1:13 p.m. What is it? 6:13 p.m. there?
Yes, 6:13 p.m. So I've actually told my son he must not make a sound because he is actually here. He's not at school, so he's like, you know, don't make any noise. But I have so many things to talk to you about. But today we are going to be exploring the concept of your future self. And not only the concept, but really the science behind how we can radically change our lives simply by getting intentional about creating, imagining, and even scenario planning for the future. So first up, could you tell the listeners, what is your future self?
Absolutely. It's kind of interesting just listening to you. I think it would be impossible to intentionally change your life without knowing who your future self is. That is actually like the definition of intentional, is to be purposeful. And so, yeah, this is really interesting. It was interesting to me when I first came across the research. I didn't even know that this body of research existed until about 2.5 or 3 years ago. I was writing a book called Personality Isn't Permanent. And then all of a sudden I just fell onto all this research, and I'm like, oh my goodness, this is it. And interestingly, and for the listeners, if you haven't heard a lot about this idea, you will now start seeing it everywhere because it's now becoming very mainstream. And I kind of saw that that was the case. But just as a quick like background, the field of psychology as a whole, most of the theories for really over 100 years, from the late 1800s to the late 1900s, really focused on past self, and believed that as people, we were the byproduct of our past. So like Freud, for example, Freud believed that who a person is mostly is the byproduct of their early childhood experiences. Whereas there's just so much new research in positive psychology and even neuroscience that's kind of flipping the script on that. And it's showing that as human beings, it's actually the future that we're most committed to that's driving our life. And by most committed, it's the things that we're committed to, we're striving for, that we want. And so our future self is really, there's a few different ways to look at it. One is the default future that you've already assigned yourself to have. And for most people, that default future isn't much different than their current life. Actually, the research shows that most people, they're not very imaginative about who their future self is. And they also believe that for the most part, even 10 or more years into the future, their future self, the person they will become, most people believe that their future self is very similar to their current self. And that's a rough idea because it's basically a fixed mindset, whereas the research actually shows your future self is going to be really different. Even if you're not trying to change a lot, your future self is going to be way different than you expect. But you can then start to think about your future self, and you can ask me whatever questions you want, but it becomes really important to get to know your future self, to start investing in your future self, become friends with your future self, because the more connected and committed you get to your future self, the bigger the jumps you can make in your life right now.
This, honestly, this whole topic is fascinating to me as somebody who is very focused on the future. So with the work that I do, my personal life, you know, I'm someone who's always, I'm less interested in the past and more interested in the future. Hence, you know, I work with technology companies, startups. I was director of innovation. I'm always challenging people to think about change in a positive way and to embrace the inevitable change. So I think before we even go into all of my questions, I want to really start with people's initial reaction. So depending, you know, whoever's listening to this right now, they may be feeling a certain way. So, you know, if you're someone like me, as I said, kind of obsessed with future thinking, behavior change, I find it exciting to imagine and then to reimagine and reimagine again, different futures for myself and different scenarios for the world that we live in. But I know that a lot of people don't enjoy that kind of thing. So some people, for example, they maybe really resist the idea of change. As you said, they may say, well, you know, in 5 years' time, I'm just going to be doing what I'm doing now. Maybe I like my life how it is. I don't really want it to change. You know, I'm not striving to be a different person. I'm just quite happy and content with my life. And I hope that it stays the same. Other people have sometimes quite a visceral reaction where they might roll their eyes and say, oh, you know, hypothetical scenarios, what's the point in thinking about things? Just live for today, you know, just focus on right now, because none of those things might happen. But it's very interesting when you sit around with a group of people, how each person's reaction can be quite different. So before, yeah, we dive into all my questions about the future self and how it can help us, what's going on there with those different reactions? Why do some people love this stuff and other people kind of really don't enjoy thinking too far into the future?
That's a really good question. I don't know. The easy answer is I don't know. But what I will say to those who may have more negative reactions or just skeptical reactions, let me just provide just two quick data points or scenarios. One is, and this is one thing that Daniel Gilbert does at Harvard. He's one of the leading researchers on this subject. He actually gave a main stage TED Talk in 2014 called The Psychology of Your Future Self. So he spent a lot of time studying this, Harvard psychologist. One of the big things he does to get people thinking differently about their future self is he asks them to think about their past self, call it 10 years from now. If you were to actually look at who your past self was and what your past self was like, even 10 years ago, if you actually really began to dig into it, you'd realize how radically different the person you are today is from who you were 10 years ago. Like, I'm not talking about things just like the friends you had or the goals you had, maybe the priorities, the habits. I'm literally talking about how you see the world, how you navigate the world. Your entire mental model and personality is actually different. There may be some things that are still similar, but you're actually a very different person in a very different situation with very different priorities, focus, goals. Like, your whole life is actually different. And you could probably do that even for a year or 2 years ago. I actually did an exercise, like literally in my car, in my journal not long ago, where I wrote down, I said, what are all of the things in my life that are different than they were 12 months ago? And I just started listing them out. One is like the house I'm in right now. This is an office that I have. I didn't have this house 12 months ago. What else? You know, there's so many other things that are different. Like my 3-year-old girls now go to school, whereas last year they weren't in school. Our 10-year-old boy, he's now back in school. We homeschool our older 3 kids, but the 10-year-old wanted to go back. I've published 2 books, you know, like The Gap and the Gain and Future Self. Those were not published. Like, my financial situation's a little different. Like, I got down to the nitty gritty and I started writing down, what are all of the ways my life is actually different? I'm working on a book that I wasn't working on. Like, but there's other things that are different as well, like certain health things. And so, and with my kids and with my life. And so it's interesting if you do something like that to see, even on a 1-year time frame, how different your life is over 1 year. So that's just one thing, is realizing how much your life is already changing. And so in psychology, they call it the end of history illusion, to assume that things are going to stop changing from here. In a year from now, if I was talking to you and we did this same exercise, what are all the things that are different? There'd be a lot different to your future self in 1 year from now than your life right now. So that's one important thing. Here's the second one, which is actually really interesting and kind of proves the point. This is the point that as people, we're all very driven by the view that we have of the future. So whatever view you hold most potently, most powerfully, most committedly that you most believe about the future, that's the thing, that is what's driving your life right now. So as an example, I know lots of people who believe, who have kind of doomsday beliefs about the future. Mm. Like, you know, the economy is going to crash and all these things. And so because they hold those beliefs drive their actions and attitudes in the present. So for example, they may be like, I have friends who have literally moved out to Texas out in the middle of nowhere, bought ranches, and now are like total preppers. Like they like are off the grid, like have 20-year food supplies and stuff. All of those actions are based on their view of the future, right? Mm. And so as a person, everything you're doing right now is based on the future you most believe and the future that you've most committed yourself to. And so you may have a pessimistic view of the future, and that's obviously going to be bad for your motivation and other things. You may have a really optimistic and excited or hopeful view of the future. And so the view you have of the future is the driver of who you are today. And so this is why it becomes really important to start expanding that view and thinking about different views, so that, because otherwise you really won't change who you're being in the present.
Yes. And also, if you're not going to change and you're not intentional, the time is going to pass anyway. And that is something that I'm going to stick a pin in and come back to. Because firstly, I love what you said about this idea of, okay, look at the last 10 years and look at the things that have changed. And what came into my mind, because I love people and I, you know, that's probably one of my favorite thing in the world is people and relationship building. And I actually thought when you said that, all the people that I've met in the last 10 years, even some people that I've met recently in the last 12 months who I'd never met then, they weren't a part of my life and now they're a big part of my life. And it makes me excited to think, okay, what about the people I'm going to meet in the next 10 years that I've never even met yet? And I often say to people, you know, when I'm trying to encourage them, especially as I feel like maybe it's just for women, I don't want to just... I don't want to exclude men from this, but often in my experience, as women age, when they're celebrating maybe like a 40th birthday or a 50th birthday, and they might be like, oh, I'm getting older, and they think it's a, you know, bad thing. And I'll always say to them, look, you, the rest of your days are still maybe the best days that you haven't, you know, going to do things you've never done. You're going to meet people you've never met. And I often encourage people to think about some firsts. So what are some things you have never done and you're going to do for the first time? And it's just so exciting, as you said, if you flip that mindset around and you choose to look at the future with optimism, then regardless of whether you're 20, 40, 60, whatever age, you can really get excited about your future, what is possible for yourself and what's possible for your life.
I agree. And one thing that excites me about knowing that my future self is a totally different person from who I am today, it allows you to really kind of think creatively. It also allows you to be a lot more patient and compassionate with your current self. Like, so the idea of a fixed mindset is the idea that you're trying to prove yourself, trying to prove that you know what you're doing. You're not, you don't want to fail. You know, you don't want to get things wrong because you've got a fixed mindset. You've overly defined things. And so I love the quote from Brené Brown. She said, you're either trying to get it right or you're trying to be right. And if you're trying to be right, that's basically a fixed mindset where you're trying to prove that you've already got it all figured out. But when you're trying to get it right, and when you know that your future self is really different, what that does is it lets your current self off the hook a little bit. You don't have to have all the answers right now. Like, I don't need to give the most perfect answers to your questions, because like my current self is temporary. Like if you ask me that question a week from now, I might have a lot better information. So like it allows you to be a lot more flexible, compassionate with your current self, and allow you to like make mistakes, be more iterative, actually be more interested in learning. But it also opens you up to thinking a lot more creatively. So like Albert Einstein said, imagination is more important than knowledge. So it's like, if I know my future self can be almost like insane, so different that it's not even comparable to my current self, like what is possible? Like my future self doesn't speak any other foreign languages, but like my future self could be speaking three. I'm not saying I'm going to choose that or invest in that direction, but it allows you to be a lot more creative and open to what's possible.
Yes, absolutely. And if someone listening is now thinking, okay, this is exciting and I want to start thinking about my future and my future self, where should we begin? Do we need to start off by thinking about, you know, really tangible things like, where do I live and who do I live with? You know, do I have children? Do I have a dog? You know, what things are in my life? Or do we need to think maybe just more conceptually and be a bit more vague? So, I don't know, I want to be traveling more. I want to be leading a group of people in an organization, or, you know, how granular should we go and where should we start?
So I think that it's a skill set. It's like building a muscle. If you've never done this before, you're probably going to start more vaguely, more broadly. But as you get very good at this skill set, you develop what psychologists call vividness, where it does get very granular and you can get a lot more detailed and you can build a lot more context. And then you can start being a lot more strategic because now you've got a clear vision. But just as a, let me like, so there are very clear first steps, but let me just lay this out from the beginning. There's a lot of research by a guy named Hal Hirschfield. I lay a lot of it out in the book, but he's been a psychologist at UCLA studying the future self concept for decades. I owe a lot of my insight to him. He's got really interesting ideas. But his research all hits a lot of hard points. And like, it's very, there's very direct correlations. If you're not connected to your long-term future self, there's a lot of downsides to not being connected to your future self and not caring about your future self and not worrying about your future self. Like what the research shows is if you're not clear connected to your future self, you're not going to make, you're going to set yourself up for disaster, call it financially, in your health. Like we see it. We see, like, at least here in America, and I'm sure it's similar in the UK and in Europe, like a lot of, actually they show that like the age that people start thinking about retirement, at least in the US, is like age 27. And like usually retirement's around 65. So like that's like almost, that's a lot of years, right? That's like almost four decades. But even with four decades to actually set themselves up, their future self up, most really don't. Like most people in America don't set themselves up very well for that. And Hal Hirschfield's research shows that like one of the obvious reasons is because they never actually really start thinking about their future self and actually setting that up. So like just to put it really simply, and then I'll start into some of the kind of fundamental steps, and then we can go, you know, into the, like the higher level steps if you want. But basically, if you get really connected to your future self to the point where you develop a really great friendship with your future self, by friendship, what I mean is if someone's really your friend, if you really care about someone, then it doesn't bother you to go out of your way for that person. Like if a really good friend of mine, like, you know, got a flat tire or something like that, and like I needed to go and help them, like I'd be all right with it because I love that person. If it was some stranger or someone I didn't like, I don't know if I'd really want to go out of my way. You know what I mean? And so like, that's a good indicator of like, if your future self is not really, if you don't have a great relationship with your future self, if you don't have a connection with them, if you're not friends with them to some degree, you're probably not going to go out of your way for them right now. So like Hal Hirschfield's research shows, and there's even a TED talk on the subject called The Battle Between Your Present and Your Future Self. Like, the present self usually wins, and short-term gratifications, you know, short-term dopamine hits, whether it's just scrolling on social media, eating bad food, like those things will win if you're not connected to your future self.
Yeah. I just want to jump in there.
Go ahead. Please do. Please
honestly,
do. Please.
As someone who's, you know, worked in the fitness and well-being industry for over a decade, and a lot of the listeners of this show will know, you know, a lot of runners listen to this show and a lot of people that are, you know, interested in fitness and health and well-being. And I feel like this is such a topical thing, because when you talk about, you know, having that, I guess, awareness, attachment, you know, consideration for your future self, it is really interesting what you described then around retirement and, you know, maybe investing for the future. You know, it sounds pretty boring in your 20s. It's the same when it comes to our physical bodies. So if I said to a 25-year-old, okay, you know, I really think it's important for you to do these kind of exercises now to prevent your posture and back pain in your 60s, like nobody cares. Or, you know, this is going to reduce your risk of having a heart attack, having a stroke, having diabetes, being able to run around the park with your grandchildren, or, you know, go swimming. When you're in your 20s, you're like, yeah, okay, whatever. Like nobody cares about their back pain when they're 60. But it is funny how even in the health and fitness industry, you see this kind of change. And for whatever reason, sometimes, sadly, it's due to ill health or pain that people change that mindset. But sometimes it's just an awareness where people go, actually, yeah, when I'm 40 or 50 or 60 or 70, I still want to be able to run 10K, or I still want to be able to, yeah, take my kids or my grandkids and go for a bike ride. And it's whenever that change happens, for whatever reason, everything else shifts. So as you said, the motivation to go to the gym, or the motivation to go for that walk every day, or change the foods that you eat, or go to bed early. All these health habits that we kind of put off or we think aren't going to be important because in the moment today, it doesn't make much difference if you do a run, don't do a run. But in the long term, like you said, having that goal for the future, that's why I sign up to endurance events. That's literally the reason I put races in my calendar, is because I know that, okay, in 12 weeks, we're going to be running that race. I can't really skip my run today. But if I don't have those future goals, even short-term goals like a half marathon, then okay, maybe I can run tomorrow. So yeah, I think for a lot of people listening to that, if you don't have the attachment, the idea, the kind of, I love the word vividness, a real vivid idea for the future, then of course those day-to-day decisions, day-to-day habits are going to be a lot harder to make.
Yeah, I mean, you said so many interesting and amazing things. So there's a quote that comes to mind. One is, it comes from Jeff Olson. I think he wrote The Slight Edge. I could be wrong. But anyways, the quote's from Jeff Olson. It says, time will be your friend or your enemy. It will promote you or expose you. And I think that's kind of what we're talking about here, is like, if you start to get intentional and thoughtful about your future self, and then you start actually using that goal or that vision to start determining what you do here and now. So like, in kind of the time management world, or even I'm thinking like Stephen Covey, like there's a conversation of the difference between important versus urgent, right? And I think of like, my future self's what is important. My daily schedule is what's urgent. And hopefully the two can start to combine, where your daily schedule starts to be more of you doing the big important things. Like as an example, you having that half marathon and using that as like a forcing function to training today. You have a clear goal. And so like, of course you want to set yourself up to succeed in that goal. And you kind of set the target or signed up for the race in a lot of ways to kind of determine or like design how you're going to train now. And so, yeah, your life starts to get really enjoyable when you're doing the things you want to, not the things you feel like you have to. And this is one of the reasons why I love like all of this stuff on Future Self, is because you can start to think like, who do I want? How do I want my life to be? Like, and then you can start designing your life, your schedule around building towards that. One of my favorite quotes actually comes from Dan Sullivan. He says that the only way to make your present better is by making your future bigger. And it goes straight to the idea that your present is in direct alignment with the future you most see for yourself. Kind of like,
I love that. Make it bigger. I love that.
Yeah. I mean, well, that's because if it's bigger, then your days are going to be spent going through a much more intense growth curve, which means you're going to probably be learning a lot more. I call it failing as your future self. You know, there's a lot of gnarliness in, you know, committing to something big and courageously attempting and failing and learning. Like those kind of days are a lot deeper experientially than the days that where you're just repeating the past and you're not really, it's kind of like autopilot. You're not really learning or exposing yourself or like transforming your thinking. One other just really quick thought, and then it's just with you scheduling that race. This is the idea of having clear milestones up ahead. There's actually a lot of research on this, and I did talk about it in the book, but what the researchers did was is they took people out in the woods and they just asked random people, and they put a GPS device like on their shoe, like a tracker. And they took people out to the woods and they just told the people, walk in a straight line for as long as you can, like for like 10 minutes. And so they would take people out and they would just say that. That was where the only instructions was, walk straight forward for as long as you can. And then after like the 10 minutes or whatever, they'd get together with the researchers and the researchers would ask them some questions like, you know, was that hard? Did you walk straight? You know, how did it go? And the people were like, oh yeah, like they were completely confident that they had walked in a perfectly straight line. And what the researchers would then do is they would show them on the computer the GPS of the tracking of their actual steps. And what the people had done was is they thought they were walking straight, but they were literally walking in circles, like tight circles, like really. And they would test the same people twice. And like, sometimes they were circles to the left, sometimes they were circles to the right. But the main kind of takeaway from the study was if a person, and then like they did follow-ups where they would give people like a milestone up ahead, you know what I mean? But if a person does not have a clear indication of where straight is, they'll think they're going straight when in reality they're going in circles. And it's kind of an interesting analogy, because if you don't have clear milestones up ahead, you're probably going in circles, meaning you're just like repeating yourself and you're not actually making any progress. And so like, I like the idea of having a race, because like now you have a clear milestone that you can work towards. If you don't have clear milestones up ahead, like for me, if I don't have like a goal where it's like write the next book or finish the next chapter, if I don't have a milestone up ahead, I think I'm going straight, but in reality, I'm going in circles. So I just think it's important to utilize that.
Yes, I'm totally the same, especially when it comes to the writing. If I do, I said this to my editor recently, because we are working and thinking about another book. And I basically said to her, I have to have hard deadlines. Almost like, you know, if I have a hard deadline, I won't miss it. But if someone says to me, oh, you know, have a think about it, send some stuff over, then it will never happen. I have to have hard deadlines.
I agree.
And so, looping back to when we said about, okay, where should people start? What can they do? I'm sure they've got so many ideas already from everything you've said. But as an actual, I guess, practical takeaway, would you suggest for somebody to, maybe just go on a walk and think about the future self? Or would you say, okay, after reading the book, get a pen and paper and start writing down, bullet points? Should people write something to their future self that they can look back on in maybe 12 months and schedule a calendar? What could we do today after we finish listening to this to get in touch and start to think about that future self?
So there are like beginner principles and then there are expert principles. And so like I'll start with the beginner ones. Take some time to actually think about it. Like literally, like as you were saying, it could be on the walk. Like again, this is a muscle to be built. Like again, a lot of the research shows that one of the reasons people don't think their future self is going to be much different is because they just genuinely can't imagine it. Like they don't have imagination skills. And so you can just start to as a really basic concept, honestly, just give yourself a date. Like, you know, I think in terms of various, various points in the future. So like I have an 8-year-old son. I know that he's going to be 18 in 8 years, which is also going to be in 2030. So if I was just sitting around and thinking,
sorry, in 10 years, he's going to be 18.
No, he's 10 years old now. I said it wrong.
Okay.
He's 10 years old. And so in 8 years, he'll be 18. And so it's 2022. So 8 years, that's 2030. So like as a basic, I could just think about what does my life actually look like in 2030? So let's start with my age. I'm 34 years old. Okay. So in 2030, I'm going to be 42. I'm going to have, that 10-year-old is actually my middle child. So he's going to be 18. His older sister is going to be 21. And my oldest son, who's now 15, in 8 years, he's going to be 23. So I'm going to have a 23-year-old. And so like, this is just basic, like actually putting it on paper and starting to think about your future self a little bit and starting to think like, what else does my life look like? Like, so this is just the beginning, like is where you start to actually think about your future self. What Hal Hirschfeld talks about is like you want to start to get connected to your longer term future self. I'm saying longer term because when you get really strategic, you obviously are going to start to be a lot more short term, probably like no more than a 3-year time window for setting like massive goals. But to just start to get connected, and really what Hal wants you to do is he wants you to start to have empathy for your future self, just like you'd have empathy for another person, empathy for a friend. If you have empathy for another person, you realize that they're coming from different place than you are. They've got different perspectives. They care about different things. And so if I've got some empathy for my 8-year out future self, he's 42 years old, he's got a 23-year-old, he's got like these older kids, and I can start to like think like, what does that guy care about? Like, where does he want to be with those kids? Like, what else is going on with that guy? Like, this is just like basic. I'm just starting to think about my future self and starting to wonder who he is or who he could be. And like, that's a really good starting point. In order to like start to get more vivid, you know, I could obviously start to like literally pull out the pen and the pad, which is where stuff starts getting real. And I could write down 2030. Here's my age. Here's how old my kids are. Where do I really want things to be? Like, and I think that it's best to kind of define your life out in priorities. I love the quote from Jim Collins, you know, if you have more than three priorities, you have none. And
yes.
And so it's like, what are the three most important things I could focus on right now that would set up my future self for success? Like, what are the areas that I really want like to control to a lot of degree and like be in a good place in 8 years. So like those are some starting points. And then obviously you'd really want to like start to clarify, like, what do I want to look like? Where do I want to be? Like it could be your three priorities might be different than mine. You know, like mine might be in terms of like writing books or working with my, being, spending time with my kids or where I'm going to live. But you really want to start to like start to build it out from there.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I think one thing that comes to mind for a lot of people when I speak to them about future self and whether it's 10 years, 20 years, is money. And often people will say, you know, again, we could do a whole, probably a whole other hour talking about, yeah, our relationship and our idea around money for today and the lifestyle that we want to have. And I guess some of the trade-offs that some people are willing to make for a future fund or pension or whatever. So I don't know if you're familiar, you're probably familiar with the term FIRE, the financial independence retire early. Yeah, so cool. I feel like a lot of people online are, you know, especially I think post-pandemic, they're really kind of looking at this FIRE, which for the listeners, if you don't know, is financial independence, retire early. And of course, the internet, we love extremes. So there's like extreme people who are kind of saying, right, you know, if you want to retire by the age of 30, this is how much you need to save and this is how you can do it. And you can essentially live super frugal, never spend any money, never eat out, never do anything, but then you can retire. Whereas there's other people suggesting, okay, maybe you want to retire when you are 50. And it actually, I listened to a podcast recently where they did like a really simple breakdown. And so I kind of applied it to myself. I'm going to be 35 very soon. And it kind of said, okay, if when you're 55, so for me, that's 20 years, if you needed X amount of money, how much would you need to save per year? And so you look at a number and let's just say you picked £20,000 a year. If you saved £20,000 a year, if I did that for the next 20 years, I would have £400,000. And then if you add things like, I don't know, interest, you allow for inflation, it's probably going to be more likely to be £460,000. Now, of course, I'm not saying that that is possible for everyone. And, you know, some people might say, well, like they can only afford to save £5,000 a year, whatever the number is. It basically says that, you know, if you look at that question and it's not about, okay, can I afford it or can I not afford it or what compromises or trade-offs would I be willing to make now, whether it's, you know, yeah, maybe driving a different car or maybe, I don't know, spending less on holidays or whatever the thing is that you choose to save on and then maybe you splurge on something else. It's essentially saying when you get to that age, so fast forward 20 years, would you rather have that money or not have that money? And I know that sounds so obvious because of course people would be like, yeah, of course I would rather have the money. But then you have to be real about those trade-offs and say, well, which trade-offs are you willing to make? So I think money is probably one that, again, very complex, it's very nuanced. But do you feel like when you, in the work that you've done in all the research and when you talk to people about this future self, does money come up? How do people think about their financial future when they're making decisions today?
I think money is one of the biggest ones, you know, and I think what's important to realize is that like the whole concept of compound interest is that like compound interest isn't just things like when you put money away, like let's just say I'm investing, you know, $5,000 a year or whatever, like that money grows in other ways, but compound interest is also in your ability to do things. So like, let's say that right now I'm making a certain amount of money and I can only invest it like a small amount. If you start committing to that and start like actually learning how to get better at it, and you can get really good where it's like, maybe this is how much you're investing now. Like using yours as an example, $20,000 a year. But if you got really good at this, in 3 years, you might be able to be investing $60,000. In 5 years, you might be investing like $130,000. If you got really good at this, your future self is going to be able to do things you can't now do, similar to like that you can do things your past self couldn't do. And so if you start actually doing it, you start to get really good at it. And so Yeah, certainly money is one of the biggest areas. I think that kind of if you were to look at like the big areas that people think about, they think about their health, their money, and their relationships. Like those are like the big ones, and also just like kind of quality of life, lifestyle. Like what is the day-to-day life of your future self?
Yeah, I think post-pandemic, another thing that's universal is definitely this idea of people retraining, changing careers, leaving their jobs, you know, reevaluating their whole work situation and whether they're able to work remotely and go into the office. And so a question I had recently actually on social media, I was doing a Q&A and somebody said to me, okay, I want to retrain, I want to do something new, but it's going to take 3, maybe 4 years to do so. And so she was kind of saying, I think she said she was late 30s. And she was like, if I do that, I'm going to be nearly 40. And then I'll be starting with this qualification. But, it kind of feels like a little bit too late. And so she kind of said, what advice would you have? Or how could she motivate herself to make that change? And I, again, it was similar to this question, was thinking, well, the time is going to pass whether you retrain or not. So would you rather be turning 40 and you've invested, because, using that word again, not just investing money, but invested your time to study and get that degree? Or would you rather get to 40 and you haven't done the degree and you're still doing the job you're doing now? And suddenly she was like, oh, wow, like, of course I want to do it. But when people think about investing time into something that's, going to pay off later, there is often this challenge of like, is it going to be worth it? Am I going to regret it? 4 years is a long time. And I think just the idea of starting something, especially in the world now when, we get things so quickly, the idea of 4 years to some people feels like an eternity. I mean, as you said, you have children. I have a young son. If I said to him, start doing this now, and in 4 years, you're going to see the benefit, he'd just be like, no way. So yeah, how can people, I guess, start to think about that if they're starting something from scratch? Let's say they're starting their savings today, or they're going to retrain. How can they flip that script around of thinking, oh, for your 4 years, or even say 10 years is just too long to get committed to?
One thing that's very interesting, and I'm sure you can relate, is that the better you get at this as a skill, the longer out you think. And so like all of a sudden, maybe in the beginning, doing something that's going to pay off in 6 months maybe feels like, whoa, that's too long, but over time, your vision really starts to go further and further out, where it's like, yeah, I'm cool committing to this for the next 20 years. You know what I mean? Like, so like you do get better at it. There's also like nowadays a lot of talk on what's called long-termism. So like it's a skill. And like, I think that the people who I know who are really good at like having a vision and knowing who they are and also knowing who they want to be, like they start really thinking in terms of like even like 25-year timeframes. And like, but like to get started, I think one thing that's really important in listening to some of your examples, like the person who's thinking about themselves at age 40 and they're like, do I really want to do this like for 8 years or something like that? Or like even committing to something that might take 3 or 4 or 5 years and it's like, man, is it really worth it? One thing that really helps me is not worrying about what anyone else is doing. Often it's in the comparisons with others that you start to worry. Oh, it's like, well, really at age 40? Like maybe if you ever feel like you're behind, it's because you're comparing yourself to externals. Like no one is playing the same game as you. No one has the same future self as you. And so I think one big important thing that helps me is realizing I have zero external competition. I'm not competing with anyone. No one has my same goals. No one has my same purpose. So like I have zero competition. Like I'm not worried about your future self and me trying to outdo you and you outdoing me, or trying to get somewhere before other people. Like that gets you going down the wrong goals. That gets you kind of, as they would say, you're climbing the ladder and eventually you realize it's leaning against the wrong wall. So like, I think a big release is to realize, look, you get to choose your own future self and you get to decide how far you're going to take that. And it has nothing to do with anyone else except for those who are coming along for the ride, like your kid, for example, or like some close friends. But even a lot of those people will phase in and out because your futures will no longer kind of be going in the same direction.
That comparison trap that you're describing, I think, is so, so important. And we all are guilty of doing it. I certainly know that I am. And I think, to be honest, the modern world, especially media, it just perpetuates it, because we have this real, you know, we idolize youth and we talk about, you know, 30 under 30. And as you said, if someone says, okay, at 45, I'm going to start a business, or they're going to publish their first book. Or as you said, it doesn't matter, because you're not comparing yourself to the next author who may be 25. It's actually that idea that, yeah, your goals, your life, your timeline, like whatever it is uniquely yours. And I think it's so difficult, you know, it's easy to say, but definitely hard to do. And I think I would be such a hypocrite if I said, oh yeah, you know, I never compare myself. It's like you look left and right, and suddenly I feel like that's also what gives people this real sense of urgency. I feel that amongst my peers, you know, I have a lot of high achieving peers, and they have this sense of urgency that as soon as they do something, you know, one book's published, or, you know, they've got one degree, or they've, yeah, completed an endurance triathlon and they got the podium, they're straight away, the question people ask, they say, oh, congratulations, what are you doing next? And it's straight away, we all, I think, have this urgency now to achieve and to, you know, I'm sure you're familiar with this new, you know, announcement culture. What are you going to announce next? And therefore, I think we're all racing to get to that next thing. And like I said, I'm guilty of doing it myself. But when you said that, I thought, yeah, we need to stop trying to compare the time of what we think is okay to be too old or too young or whatever, and just go for it.
Yeah, like, so Dan Sullivan, who's a good friend of mine, he and I write books together. He has a little book he calls Wanting What You Want. He talks about the difference between wanting something and feeling like you need it. I think that this culture that you're talking about is where people feel like they need to get somewhere in order to be successful, or in order. And the problem with that cycle is that it doesn't matter how far you go, you'll always need the next thing. It's almost like an unhealthy attachment to your future, which is a really unhealthy approach. Whereas wanting what you want is really, and this connects with choosing your own future self, is that we all choose for ourselves our own standards. In a lot of ways, your identity is the standard you hold for yourself. It's what you believe in about yourself and what you commit yourself to. That is what your identity is. And a lot of times our standards are just adopted by, you know, our culture, our friends, our family. But you do ultimately choose for yourself the standards you have for yourself, whether that, you know, whatever those are. And so it becomes really beautiful when you just start to say, this is what I want. This is what I'm going for. Like, this is, it's kind of funny, by the way, because we all have standards. And like, as an example, I was recently back in Utah where I live, and I was with my cousin. My cousin lives at my dad's house, and he's really big into World of Warcraft. He plays video games literally 18 hours a day. But like, he still has massive standards for himself. His standards are just directed at that game. Like, he's literally one of the top guys in the game, and he's part of like these groups. And he was telling me that he left this group that he's a part of. It's an online game. He said, because they just, honestly, they're not up to my standards. Like, I just want to be in a better group, right? And so it's like, we all have standards. We just apply them in different directions. He may be applying it to video games. And one important part of all this is he's completely free to do so. That's his choice. He can want what he wants. And my opinion of what he wants doesn't really matter. He's, I'm not going to judge him. Like, he gets to choose where he directs his focus, where he directs his standards, and how far he wants to take those. If his future self is that his character in the game is at a much higher level, he can choose that. And everyone gets to choose. And so I just like the idea of wanting what you want. But ultimately, at the end of the day, it's on you to choose what your standards are going to be for yourself. Like, in other words, where you want to apply those. Like, my financial advisor, for example, like, he really wants a private jet and a yacht. And like, that's the standards he's going to start to hold for himself financially and stuff like that. Has nothing to do with me. Like, those are not my standards financially. Yeah. But I do have my own. Yours might be in your health. Mine might be as me as an author. Mine might be as myself as a parent. And so I think choosing, what are the things you really care about? What are the things you really value? And how high of a standard are you going to go in those areas? You get to choose that. And then ultimately the key is then taking the goal that you have in that area and making it your standard. Because if it's not a standard, then it's not your norm. And so you'll say yes to a lot of things below the standard. But like once you make something a standard and it's a true standard, you got to start saying no to the stuff that's below that. So I just think choosing for yourself the direction you're going to go and then how high you're going to hold yourself or how far you want to go in that direction is all your choice.
Yeah. And I love this one, what you want, free from judgment from others, but from yourself. This is honestly.
And free from needing to judge others for what they want.
Yes. I mean, especially as a parent, that one rings true to me, definitely. But I'm conscious of time. And I feel like, honestly, I have so many.
We're just scraping the surface. Literally. I think we need a deep round two with like no time constraints or something. I don't know how long your episodes usually go, but yeah.
You literally music to my ears because I still have so many things I want to talk to you about. I want to talk to you about worst case scenarioing and actually looking at the future and saying, okay, let's flip it around, preparing yourself for the worst case and then realizing, okay, it's not that bad. You could survive. Or, you know, thinking about hope, actually something I wrote down that I took out from the book was about how hope gives our future meaning. And there's just so much there. So we're definitely going to have.
Honestly, I agree with you. There's so many things I want to get into. Let's just schedule round two as fast as possible. But all the research on hope and just the specifics of hope, how to be a high hope person, what that does for your like ability to effectively change and grow as a person and have meaning. Like, yeah, there's so much. So yeah, we'll have to just go for round two. And hopefully round one has been useful enough for the listeners out there.
Absolutely. It's been a fantastic start and you heard it here. So yes, listeners, do not worry. We are going to dive straight into another episode and we're going to find out all about the research around hope because that is something that I think we all need. So before we conclude, I have to ask you because it's the Power Hour podcast. You know what? We're going to save it for round two because that way we definitely have to get it recorded because I ask every single guest on the show to tell us about their Power Hour, the first hour of their day, what they
do. You want me to tell you? I mean, I could tell you or we could save it.
Well, if you promise you're going to come back, we'll save it.
I'm coming back.
All right. Well, in that case, stay tuned, everyone, and we will loop back with a second episode and you'll find out exactly what Benjamin does in the first hour of his day, what he doesn't do, what he's strategic about, and what he's intentionally including for his future self. This has been fantastic, so fascinating, and I cannot wait to record part two. Thank you so much, Benjamin, for giving us your time today.
Love it. Absolutely.
And thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll be back soon. See ya. Wow, it is so good to be back. I absolutely loved that conversation with Ben. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. And I can't wait to sit down with him to record part two very soon. We will share that as soon as possible. In the meantime, if you have any questions for me or Ben, then you can reach out on Twitter at @Adrienne_LDN and on Instagram at @Adrienne_LDN. Thanks for tuning in. Have an awesome week. The Power Hour is back.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.